We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, you savages? This is episode 351 of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. A little bit of a different intro there because obviously the big moment of the last few games since we last recorded was Aaron Boone's tirade against the umpire. Scott, good morning. You're struggling. You fought the sun and the sun won. Sun is undefeated. I don't know if you knew that, but you tried to fight it on Saturday at the BP Crew event by being a hero and sitting in the sun longer than any human should have sat in the sun that day. How are you feeling this morning?
Oh no, there were plenty of people sitting in the sun because it actually wasn't that bad. Mm-mm-mm. But I didn't even get sunburned. I barely even got a tan. That's how I tan and get burned. So, you know, there were some people being a little soft. It was a little bit of that, but it was hot. There's no doubt about it. You had to prepare. I did walk in with 10 bottles of water. I felt like I had to get, like, I felt a responsibility to throw water at people if I saw them struggling. So I brought quite a few and we're handing them out. So we all survived. It was good. It was it could have been a brutal day.
So if you say it wasn't that hot, then how'd you catch a fever?
That's just from running my ass into the ground. That's what that is. That's just a weekend of running my ass into the ground.
It was quite a weekend. It was a lot of fun. Since we last recorded, man, has a lot happened with the doubleheaders. We recorded Thursday morning. Yankees were about to play a doubleheader that we said, hey, if this team can just sweep, you keep the Rays at bay and you bide your time with checking off games on the schedule that the Rays cannot catch you anymore. And they go out there and sweep. And we're going to break down, obviously, the games and the moments. But it really was, I think, if this season ends the way it should, the way we all expect it to, we're going to look at that date, that doubleheader against Tampa, as a real big moment in this season.
I mean, there's no doubt. After you drop the first game of the series, you're looking at it, and you just kind of want to get out with a split right now because then Tampa's, you know, there's no ground gained at all. And I think, there's only two games left with them for the rest of the year. So they're in a very tough position, and you're almost like checking off the boxes with teams that are, you know, have the ability to catch you at some point. And again, I don't like to go as far as saying things are, you know, as locked up as a lot of other people will, but they're in a good position, the bottom line.
On Tampa with only two head-to-head matchups to play. That's going to be very tough for Tampa.
The fact that you take three of four, you know, that changes the scape and it really just puts them in such a good position. And the momentum from sweeping the doubleheaders, which they've done this year at a high pace. I mean, John Sterling just can't even say that anymore.
They're difficult. I put some stats in here. 7-1 in doubleheaders this year. They swept Baltimore, Kansas City, and then just swept Tampa. And the only team they split with so far was the Mets.
There you go. So apparently it is easy to sweep
doubleheaders. That was a different story last year. How many doubleheaders did they have against crappy teams like Baltimore where they would just split and the excuse would be, well, it's a doubleheader.
Right. And but the thing is when you go into a doubleheader, a split, you're like, okay. You know, you don't expect a sweep when you're playing Tampa when they're the closest to your team in the division, especially with they have a lot to play for at that point, and all the games have been so close. So it was a really good series for them, and they showed their dominance, man. They flexed. It was good.
They really did kind of. That is the thing. After having Tampa steal a game on Monday, like you said, they pretty much bitch slapped him for three straight games, dominated him in the doubleheader. And I think that Boone's tirade is something that set them off. And all of the players after the game talked about how they were extremely fired up. Like, it's very clear.
Yeah.
You can tell.
They love seeing their guy go out there, defend them, say whatever the hell is on his mind, and just be that that voice. Because there was obvious frustration in the clubhouse, in the dugout with these umpires. And it's been it's been building and building and building.
Brett Gardner almost tore down the roof of the dugout.
Yeah. I mean, and that was mild compared to what he probably wanted to do, because you could see the look on his face, man. His head was even bigger than it normally is. And he's, you know, I think Boone realizes that. And that's back to the point of the type of manager that he is and the reason he's here. He's here to relate better to these guys, to have that internal pulse a little bit more than a guy like Girardi did. And, you know, all signs are pointing to Bruin really, really capturing this team. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think you can just point to ejections as the reason why, because Girardi...
But he's getting really good at them, too.
Girardi was very good at ejections, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, Bruin has ramped it up.
Yeah, well,
in a very short amount of time.
Last year, this is by far his best one. It's not even close.
Oh, no.
Last year, when he crouched behind home plate to sort of mimic like where the pitch was going, that was a great one.
That was a good one. That was very original.
Anytime you can, when you can mimic things on the field or do something to the field, like when Girardi covered the plate in dirt, that was great. But yeah, this one, he just eviscerated.
Two fingers in your face.
Eviscerated a rookie umpire who was managing who was umping his fifth game behind home plate, was completely overmatched, called a ball at Judge's ankles a strike, called a ball way outside to Brett Gardner. Those are two guys with maybe the best eyes on the team.
Right.
They're going to go back into the dugout and say, this guy doesn't know what the hell he's calling. And it's even more obvious when the viewers at home are looking at the box on screen. I said this to Dan Zimborski when I was talking to him. The worst thing to ever happen to a major league umpire is the box on screen.
It's true, because now everybody knows what it is and what it isn't.
Because
there's no question about it.
Basically, sitting at home, we have a virtual strike zone, except the strike zone is not virtual. It's not a robot. There's still a human behind there making errors. And I read an article, it was like a BU study that came out earlier in the season, but I was reading it and tweeting about it a few weeks ago. So like 34,000 pitches were missed in 2018. Yeah. It's about a 15% error rate.
That's a lot of pitches, especially when you add it up for the entire season and you hear a number like that. It just it escalates it in your head. It makes it sound makes it sound terrible.
And it's not all the calls, all of those calls are not as bad as the ones we saw Thursday.
In our minds, they are. When you hear that number, they're all egregious.
But what that, I mean, I'm sure the majority of those are barely off the plate.
Yeah.
But if you're telling me that, I mean, that's not just calling balls outside strikes or calling strikes balls. I mean, that is both. It's not one or the other. It's both.
Right.
So if we have a robot zone and you clean all of those up, I think what you also see is batters adjust. And batters are going to be swinging more.
Well, that's a good thing. What that does is also
a very good thing.
It increases the pace of the game, too. The games will actually be... I'd say that would make a significant dent in the time of the game, actually.
I'm thinking about it, yes.
Yeah, because you know if it's going to be in the zone, then you got to swing or else you know, it's going to be called. So those types of things to increase the play, to like make the ball go in play faster, is a good thing.
But we might not have a complete meltdown and a complete savages moment. Because if there's a robot umpire, what are you going to do? You can't get mad. It's a robot.
It's almost like trying to get mad at the people in New York. Like they can't.
The camera said this. The camera doesn't lie. So you know how the Atlantic League was testing this? First game that they implemented the robot zone, the first manager got thrown out in the first inning for arguing balls and strikes. Okay. He obviously did it just on principle, but
they were doing it. Yeah, he was like, "I need to make sure that this guy out there." But they had an umpire, right? There was an umpire behind home plate to kind of manage the game and make sure things were going on.
Obviously,
the strikes were called. Yeah, but that's. I mean, I think when people in their heads think of what that would look like, I still think that there would be a human umpire. I can't believe I'm saying this, human and like android. There will be a person behind the plate, whether he's calling balls or strikes. Is one thing. Or if he calls a ball and a strike, maybe it's like in tennis where the chair umpire, you hear a ding and like you're wrong. And then they just change the call. That guy would get ridiculed. Like how many times in an inning?
He would get
destroyed by the fans.
So,
ding.
Right. Like you said in tennis, it's just be a ding counter every time he's wrong. Like you said with tennis, I mean, there was a challenge. I was watching the women's Wimbledon final and there was a challenge and they had that thing in 2 seconds. I'm not exaggerating. 2 seconds.
They're not all like that, but they're pretty damn close. Yeah.
But they have. What I'm saying is that we have technology to make it so they can identify a ball or a strike in 2 seconds.
Oh, absolutely. They can absolutely see it. It's all there. All the technology completely exists. So it's a matter of them implementing it. And you know, I think we'll see. Well, this is one of those things that's starting in the independent leagues. That I do believe we will start seeing climb up in the minor leagues. I don't think we're going to see stealing first base.
No. Guy on second catch in on. Extra innings, all the wonky
that
shit.
Ain't catching
we're
on.
Not seeing that.
The robot strike zone, I think, is going to have some legs and will be actually tested in the near future with baseball more familiar to everybody else.
The wrinkle in all of this, and I haven't really heard it talked about, is I know the umpires have a union.
Yes.
And they make a lot of money for what they make a decent amount of money. So they don't want this. That's right. Jobs lost. That's future salary lost. I know you said there's still going to be umpires on the field, but yeah. If they're not as important and you don't have to rely on them nearly as much, guess what? There's going to be fewer of them and they're going to be getting paid less.
You know, maybe some of these guys were old guys, man, and it's hot out there and they're wearing all this gear and they're doing all these things. Like, maybe they just need to relax a little bit. This Brendan was, I mean, he was getting.
What was his name? Brendan Miller?
He was getting yelled at by DJ LeMahieu. I mean, that's when you know you're bad at that point. Like, LeMahieu's talking about the balls and strikes, saying that they're terrible and that it was, some of these calls were just bad. When that's happening, when a guy like DJ LeMahieu's getting up there, the boiling point is so close to the top. That's like one of those indicators. Like, if you're looking for, like, market indicators of, like, a bottom or a top, like, that's the bottom of a, and it's going to explode up. Like, you're looking at a short squeeze right there, popping through the roof. They're about to start screaming at people if DJ LeMahieu's getting mad and right. Vocally mad.
He doesn't want to open his mouth because that affects his dip. He just wants to get a nice head buzz going, wants to make a few diving plays in the infield and go 3 for 4.
That's all he wants to do. He doesn't want to talk to anybody. He doesn't want any attention. He barely wants it. He's hiding behind his glasses, and he's just going to go out there and do his job. So, yeah, he's talking to umpires and barking back at them. Something's wrong. Something's going on in that point, and there's a change that needs to be made. And the fact that Boone went out there, and he did it quickly. He got tossed because he was mouthing. The umpire gave him the warnings and all this crap. But he knew at that point that there was no way he could back down. And he had to go out there and make a point. Who cares when it is in the game, right? You got to go out there and make a point. When Aaron Judge is continuously getting called out on balls that are in the middle of his shin, you got to do something. Because the next step is for Judge to start screaming to people. And then that could go bad.
The umpire, oh man, would he be scared. No, it was the perfect moment to do it early in that game because, first of all, you could tell he was probably annoyed. He was annoyed that the game was delayed an hour and 20 minutes, and they already had a long day ahead of them with a doubleheader. The umpire is missing calls left and right. The team is down early because Herman gives up back-to-back home runs to start the game, and we're not going to win this game if Chirinos is getting calls 6 inches off the plate and 6 inches off the dirt. So right. We got to do something. It's going to be right now. And it was a perfect storm of things that we were able to hear all of the quotes from Boone, because I was talking to Keith about this, who was at the stadium for the first pitch of the doubleheader, and he was like, there was less than 10,000 people in the stadium. That's when the that kid. Was going on, because yeah. Rain delay, doubleheader, it's the middle of the afternoon, people are still at work, people didn't plan on getting there anyway until the middle of that game because they're coming from work.
Their tickets were for the 7 o'clock game. Their tickets right. were for the night game. So
they didn't plan on getting there at 3 o'clock.
Right.
Even though the game started at 4:20, they didn't plan on being there until at least 6.
Right.
So all of the microphones in the stadium that would normally be picking up crowd noise were now picking up the yelling on the field. Right. Because if this was 40,000 people in the stadium, we wouldn't have heard any of this.
We would have heard some of it, but not as clearly, for sure.
Right.
It would not have been as clear, there's no doubt.
And we got some all-time quotes. Let's rank them. So the number one has to be, my guys are fucking savages in the box.
I mean, it's great.
That's the best. And people are trying to figure out what this means. Yeah. What do you think he meant by this?
That they're killers. That could be why they're holding up the fours. Like, they're talking about they don't want to face them. They're killers. They murder the ball.
No, this is what I.
That's what you think he means.
I mean, well, so he's arguing
unbelievable.
About he's talking about balls and strikes. They are savages at controlling the strike zone and identifying pitches. They identify pitches better than your sorry ass, is what he was telling him. I'm going to trust Aaron Judge to call a ball or a strike over you.
I think you're reading into that too much. I think he just thinks that they are killers up there and they're going to do. They're professional hitters that are better than everybody else in the league. They're fucking savages. I feel like we could say it now.
Oh yeah, it's we can drop F-bombs when you follow it with a savage. Tighten this shit up was great. You're having a shit start to this game. Yeah, and honestly, I think my favorite, even though Savage's is the line, is I feel bad for you. That's just so insulting. He's like, listen, I feel bad
for you. So condescending.
I feel bad for you. You're a young kid. This is your fifth game behind on play. I'm just feeling bad for you right now. I'm about to embarrass you on national TV.
And Boone, he said it in the beginning, too, which is great.
Boone gets the suspension because he apparently made contact with the ump. If he did make contact with the ump, it was the most subtle of contact. What this suspension was really for is Aaron Boone putting the crappiness of some MLB umpires on blast.
Yeah, I mean, he even called it out as soon as the brims touched, Miller pointed to his
hat. So Boone's got to learn the Lou Piniella and spin the cap around.
He's got to spin the cap around, yeah, because you can't control that. Sometimes it just gets in your way, and you're not even real. You're not ready. You're not usually in someone's face when you're yelling, you know, all the time. So you gotta be aware of your surroundings. But they're great. The tighten it up. Everything about it, like the fact that he started with, look, I feel bad for you. You're having a horrible start to the day and I feel bad for you, but you know what? My guys are this good and they're not going to be played down because of your sorry ass, because you are having a bad day. He even gave props to the pitcher. He said, pitcher's good.
Chirinos is a good pitcher. If Chirinos is getting calls off the plate, Yankees are screwed.
Here's my point. Boone, it was fair. He was fair to everybody in there. He apologized to the umpire, called his guys savages, which they are, and even tipped his cap to the pitcher, all in the same, like, what, minute? Not even a minute of just unbelievable, perfect audio. So it was great. There were a lot of people, if you start listening to radio or, like, people comparing it, because it was all over the place, obviously, people were ranking it. I was listening to a lot of serious MLB radio, too, but they were ranking this one and the Terry Collins I think it was 2 years ago when Terry Collins was going buck on some of the umpires, and the umpires kept saying our asses are in the jackpot.
Yeah. Well,
and he's like, didn't really he help was talking about, you got to give me a chance. You got to give us a chance. Like, it was a good one, but I think the quotes from Boone's were all time.
They really are. And it's the Savages slogan. We'll follow them the rest of the year.
Definitely.
It was next man up back in April and May when they were going through all those injuries. That is now gone. They are the Savages. If this team wins the World Series, they are the 2019 Savages. That is what they will be known as. Similar to the thumbs down trend back a couple years ago.
This is so much better though. we don't have some dopey ass Mets fan like being the reason why we have it.
It was fantastic, and what it really did was extended. It gave them the motivation, whatever sort of fire they needed to sweep that doubleheader. Yankees now 12-5 against Tampa in the season series. Even though they played a lot of close games, the first two games of the series were close. All the games down in Tampa were close, but they're getting the best of them. 12-5 is a dominating record against a team who is one of the better teams in the league.
Yeah, and it could be way worse than that, too, with some of these close games at the end. I know it could go the other way as well, but the fact, you know, when we were down there a couple Saturdays ago, when Hicks, you know, tied the game up, and I keep wanting to call him Paul Aduka, by the way. Darno. I want to say Paul Aduka. I don't know why.
It's kind of the Mets thing. Paul Aduka 2.0, kind of.
Yeah. So they were... you know, those games were close, and the fact that they're doing, and that was such a big deal, such a difference this year and last year of what's happening with not just Tampa, but the American League East, period, because they're handling their business. And if you could do that, then, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. That's a tall task. It's not like just saying that is something simple to do. It's hard to do that. You should probably win more games against Toronto and Baltimore, but you're going out there and you're dominating Boston and Tampa Bay at the same in the same season. Like, obviously, you're going to have good things happen for you.
And Tampa, that this was, I think, their last chance to really get into this division race with the Yankees. It's going to be very tough for them to climb back from 9 games with only 2 left head to head. Something disastrous for the Yankees is going to have to happen, which I don't see happening. Boston, on the other hand, is worse, in a worse place in the standings wise, but I think in a better place of getting back into this division because of all of the head to head matchups they still have. They have 8 games starting this week against the Yankees. Yes, they have to pretty much win all of those games, but at least they have a chance to play them head-to-head, whereas the Rays don't.
So that's the thing. The Rays need to basically be ambulance chasers at this point, right? Like they need to draft Boston. If Boston wins a game, Tampa better win a game. If Boston wins another game, Tampa better win a game. So they're watching that, and they're going right behind them and trying to weave their way back up into it. But no, if the Yankees can, you know, handle business just like we kind of talked about going into this Tampa series, if they can go in and split, you know, they're basically putting up a zero in the you know, advancement column of how close
and,
you're going to get.
And you're knocking 8 games off the schedule.
Yeah, it's huge. So that's they can really – we're going to know – I feel like we will have a very – pretty clear idea after we play the Red Sox these next, what, 2 weeks, week and a half, 2 weeks, and we'll know. Really,
it's
going to
be Armageddon, baby. 11 days, they're going to play them 8 times.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of pressure on Boston. A lot of pressure on Boston right now, and the Yankees are going to come in feeling good, and the Red Sox, who just got – did they get swept or they lost the series? I think they lost the series. They got shut out by Baltimore last night, which is hilarious. Andrew Cashner got – got touched up by his former teammates, and then whoever the hell was pitching for them, you know, pitched well. So it's good to see. It's fun to see.
I'm also starting to look at Houston and Minnesota. The Yankees are playing Minnesota this week, but yes, the Yankees want to win the AL East, but they also want to get best record in the American League. They currently have the best record in baseball, 30 games over 500, but they're a game and a half in the standings over Houston and 4 games over Minnesota in the standings. As far as best record in the American League, because you want home field advantage throughout the playoffs. You want to be able to play the wild card team that has to burn their best pitcher in the wild card game.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's a huge deal. And we've seen over the past couple of years that the record winning the AL East is the most important thing. Like that's what you got to do first and foremost. You got to win your division and then trying to stack up as many W's as you can so that you do have the advantage to stay at home. You know, we've clearly said that they are a better team at home. They know how to play there well. This team fits very well at Yankee Stadium. So ideally, obviously, you want to be there. But that's the first and foremost. Gotta lock that down. And the fact that Minnesota's in that conversation.
It's wild.
It's crazy. Houston, I think we all expected to be there. And, you know, we kick back up that rivalry most likely because those are, I think, us and Houston Astros are clearly the two top teams.
And I'm going to talk about this in a little bit with the starting pitching, but facing Houston in a 5-game series scares the shit out of me. I would much rather face them in a 7-game series.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. I just want to beat their ass. I don't care. I want to beat their ass. I don't care if it's 5 games or 7 games. I don't think that matters as much. I just think I think this team is mentally different right now. I think they're mentally different. The fact that they came as close and they probably should have beaten them 2 years ago, they're just so much better. This is the year we've all circled, right? 2019 was the year that we all circled.
Before we knew 2017 to 2018 were going to be a thing.
No, I'm talking about when all the kids came up, when the trades were made, when Judge came up, when everybody came up. 2019 was where we circled. Like, probably by now they'll be seasoned, ready to go, you know, have enough under their belt and have enough, you know, playing time in the major leagues to really, really make a significant move.
Yeah, we're moving towards the August. August is right around the corner. That means football season is almost here. And as the pros get ready for training camp, you can be sure they're focused on the latest innovations to improve their game. Find out why players from around the NFL look to Sleep Number to get their best quality sleep. Only on a Sleep Number 360 smart bed. As the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL, Sleep Number is proud to bring game-changing sleep to everyone from parents to pro players. Your parent, Scott, you probably need a good night's sleep after this weekend. It was a long weekend for you, a lot of driving, 2 baseball games.
Yeah, it was too much. It was just too much for my body to handle. I need sleep badly. So go visit a Sleep Number store and learn how you can sleep like a pro. Plus, enter the chance to win a Sleep Number 360 smart bed and a trip for 2 to Super Bowl 54 in Miami. Visit a Sleep Number store. It's its Facebook page or via mail for official rules in the only way you can enter. You'll find a Sleep Number bed or at any of the 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the nearest one at sleepnumber.com/Bronx.
You definitely need a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
Seriously, though, go check out Sleep Number. We've talked about it before. The pillows are also fantastic if you're interested in a new pillow. Adjustable, which is also very nice because you if you don't know how thick you like the pillow, and you can just you can buy the pillow knowing it's not just, oh, if I don't like this, I'm screwed. I just spent X number of dollars. So go
three,
check out
three inserts. It's
three
great.
Inserts if you like it flat, medium, or thicker.
Yeah, they're great pillows.
All right. So I want to talk about the games, though, the doubleheader games. Herman starts out giving up back-to-back home runs. And, oh, boy, here we go. He didn't have his curveball. Both of the home runs were on hanging curveballs. That's a terrible sign. The last time out against Toronto, he dominated with his curveball. I think it was 14 swings and misses on his curveball. And one thing I was thinking about when he started this game is this was the first time he was pitching on semi-regular rest since before he went on the IL. Because he came back off the IL, so he had a long rest, and then he got the All-Star break. So those are two extended rests. Now he's getting back into the rotation 5 or 6 days.
I mean, clearly, I think in this start, what we saw was the delay affected him. He wasn't sharp out of the gate. And then when we saw Herman, we saw him buckle down, go 6 innings, only 2 runs, which were the 2 home runs in the beginning. And he, you know, showed what he could do. So, like, this one, it's so clear, like, what happened, that he just wasn't sharp in the very beginning after that delay. And whether it's, you know, him not fully ready again, or, you know, trying to just learn how to do that after a rain delay, because I'm sure that's an adjustment for a young guy like that, too. So, I love to see the fact that there were, I don't love to see the for 2 home runs, but if they are going to happen, I want to see a guy battle back and give you, you know, the start you're expecting after that. And that's what happened, man. He buckled down, and that's a big thing. That's huge to know that he has that in him. The fact that he can, you know, find trouble, battle through the adversity, and then come back and give you a damn good start and give your team an opportunity to win the game.
Boone talked about it after the game. Herman talked about Boone, too, and how he loved the ejection. The quote was, I loved it. He had good reason to go out there and fight for us. Personally, I fed off that energy. But what Boone talked about was he was impressed with the fact that he didn't have his curveball and was still able to go out there and battle. Because it's one thing to go out there with your A stuff and dominate. Okay, that's great. Glad you did that. But it proves a lot about a pitcher. And I think managers, pitching coaches love to see when something goes wrong and their guy overcomes it and can still figure out a way to get through innings.
Cohn talks about that all the time on the broadcast. Mm-hmm. He talks about the fact some of his favorite starts are the ones where he knows he goes out there, doesn't have his stuff, but can battle through 6-7 innings and prove that he can pitch. You know, maybe I don't have my best stuff, but my stuff is good enough where on a B day, on a C day, I can still get you out. I can still get swings and misses. And the fact that Herman could do that without that Bugs Bunny curveball, because that's what it is, man. That thing is when it's on, it's really good. I know I've made these comparisons early on that he's my favorite guy to watch pitch because of the differences, just his whole repertoire. He changes speeds, does a lot of big things. He reminds me of El Duque in that sense. He doesn't necessarily go to all the arm angles, but he's just fun to watch where he can change a lot up. I mean, he's got a lot to prove before he could get to the El Duque status. But, you know, the fact that he does go out there, like, that reminds me of a guy like El Duque. Like, if he didn't have his best pitcher, he had a number of other pitches that he could go to, and he was that big of a competitor and could battle and still get you deep into a game and get outs and swings and misses. That's his big deal.
Not as thick as El Duque. El Duque had those thunder thighs.
Yeah, El Duque was put together, but there's a lot of differences. And I'm just really the fact that they can change speed so much, and that curveball. I'm sorry, the change up in the zone. You know, I'm in love with that thing that he uses it as an out pitch. It's so ballsy, and I love it.
The change up in the zone. Didn't see that one coming because no one would be stupid enough to throw a change up in the zone.
And they all swing. They all swing. It's so good.
Now he just got to drop an Ephus on someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Yankees, I thought two big moments, two personally for Sanchez and Voit, who got hits in this game, run scoring hits were big because both of those guys have still been struggling, haven't looked 100% right at the plate. And with Voit, I mean, we saw him get hit in the face on Saturday.
Getting hit.
We're in the stands out in section 205, so you don't see everything. So we saw him get hit. And first of all, the way that it was kind of a weird atmosphere on Saturday because there were people in the stadium, but everyone was back. Everyone was undercover.
Yeah.
So close to the field, there was nobody. But in the tunnels or in the concourse, And then wherever there was shade, there were people.
Yeah.
But it was so
You look around the stadium and it was just like a band of people underneath the shade. And then on the first base side, as the day went on, you could see more people filtering on that side because the shade was there.
Right.
Because the sun kind of goes down over the first base line behind home plate.
But he gets hit. He gets grazed and he stays in the game. So you're like, oh, where did that hit him? Did that hit him up in the shoulder?
Yeah.
What happened? And then obviously we saw, follow on Twitter or whatever, Voit gets hit in the face. What the hell is he still doing in the game? What a savage. How is that animal still in the game? They showed him on third base. I was watching the replay with a just big swollen lip. He ends up scoring the run, comes out for defense. Back in there the next day wearing the face guard. But Voit, that's just something, you know, classic Voit. He's not going to – no undershirt on a 100-degree day. Who cares about chafing? Chafing be damned. Who cares about getting hitting in the face? Let's stay in the game.
He doesn't chafe. They talked about that on with Ruko and CeCe on their podcast. He's got strong nipples. He's got seasoned nipples. They don't chafe. And if you could go no undershirt on a 100-degree day, of course you're going to do that. So I think this is how it went down. He got hit in the face. He's like, "What the? Why am I continuously getting hit? Why is this happening?" And it's up in the zone because he's been up in they've been up in the zone on him a lot.
Do you know why he actually gets hit a lot?
Because he's close to the plate.
Because he dives.
Yeah, he's there.
So
a lot of time it's been up in the zone. It's been up towards his head.
Yeah, I mean that's messed up, obviously, and that's what CeCe was talking about back in Tampa when they hit him up in the shoulder on a retaliation.
Yeah,
you're gonna hit a guy. You're gonna hit a guy. There's places to hit a guy. Middle of the back, butt, thigh. Right. Not the head.
Yeah, yeah. So he goes up to first base. He realizes that it was a glancing blow. It hit his cheek. Like you see that replay. It's crazy how it just barely got him. He's like, "I'm not coming out of this game. You could pull me next in the middle of the inning, but I'm not coming out right now."
Yeah.
Like there's no possible way Luke Voit's coming out unless he like broke his jaw. That was the only thing I was concerned about is that if it got the jawline like on the way back and did some damage there, but
I mean, he's literally a couple centimeters away from broken teeth and a messed up jaw, like Stanton.
Not just that. I mean, like all bad things are in play at that point.
Right. So very lucky. Yeah. And I don't know why all guys don't wear this chin guard. Like, what are you messing with? I understand it might not be the most comfortable thing. And like,
it's probably distracting.
Hockey players. Oh, some guys who are grandfathered in don't wear masks. I'm like, are you out of your damn mind? There's 100-mile-an-hour slap shots, and guys are diving in front of pucks. And
who was it?
You're going to go out there.
Craig McTavish, I think, was the last guy to not wear a helmet, played for the Rangers.
Psychopath.
He kept going. He kept that going as long as he possibly could.
A law of averages, though. You're gonna get in the batter's box enough. You're going to dive in front of enough pucks. You're going to get hit in the face.
Well, so for that, like the way you hit, I mean, I could definitely see how that's a distraction because it's in your line of sight. It's something you just have to get used to, obviously.
Yeah.
But for a guy like Voit who dips in and does get, you know, hit quite often, and he kind of lunges. So I think that's other reason why he gets hit upstairs is because he gets down a little bit more. So for a guy like that, it would probably be kind of smart. But you know, he's a big animal. He's a big savage animal. So he doesn't like doing those things.
Going into game two, they get the win in game one, and you're then feeling okay about going into game two with the opener. Yankees are now 9-0 with the opener.
Wild.
Keeping tallies on that. Green goes an inning, he loads the bases and escapes. Cortez did his thing. He was okay. Put some guys on base, one run allowed. The standout pitcher I thought was Sessa, allowing 3 base runners on 45 pitches and 3 1/3 innings pitch. It's extremely efficient.
Hey man, he's been good lately. He's been turning it up. Luis Sessa has become now a guy that could go in there and fill some innings. You know, maybe they've had a meeting. Maybe Sessa and Cortez and Hale, they're all like, "You know what, guys? We're the 3-inning guys. We're the ones that are the get you out of jail free card.
Can we make a t-shirt for those 3 jabronis?
If we can basically save the game in the middle innings and just steady the ship, we got a bunch of savages out there who could just knock the ball around. All we got to do is steady the ship and these guys could come back." And I feel like they've rallied. They got like a little mini rally thing going on with the middle innings and they're good. And Sessa, man, like this is my last prediction to come true. Like this is the guy that I need. I need this guy so that I have a nice little clean sweep. And His stuff is there. We know that. We've talked about that. I'm a
That's
stuff
never
guy.
Been an issue. That's
got
never
the
been.
Stuff. The stuff has never been an issue. It's executing. It's mental. It's getting making sure that you can finish your pitches. Do all these things. And for now, because I'm not going to get too far ahead of myself, he's looking like he's progressing. So that's good.
So we got
he's got no options. So we need him to figure it out, or else someone else he's going to figure it out somewhere else.
We got David Hale. He's United States, born in America. We got Luis Sessa, Mexican. And we got Nestor Cortes. He's Cuban. Something with the...
Is this like a bar joke?
I'm not making a joke. I'm just saying like something we're in the tri-state area. That's the tri-country of...
Not to go over t-shirt ideas when we're talking to like thousands of people? We got to keep this stuff in-house so that we can come out.
Otherwise, I don't know. I
97
mean,
other people are going to come out with t-shirts.
I didn't see any other Savage t-shirts that went up anywhere.
That's right. It was only one.
On Thursday. Only ours. You can only get it at Bronx Pinstripes Fan Shop. Yeah, you're right, though. Sessa, he has, to borrow a phrase from Judge, his back is against the wall.
Yeah.
If he starts sucking, he's out of options. He can't just be sent back down to Scranton. He's going to be released.
And someone will pick him up. Someone right. will claim him. That's the thing with him. So yeah, he's at a point, and he knows what this team is. So there's a fire there. Like, look, I gotta be on this team. I gotta stay on this team. So I'm literally pitching for an opportunity to chase a championship. Because if not, I'm gonna be somewhere else. Maybe I'll be in Oakland or wherever. You know, like that's a Billy Beane waiver pickup for sure.
Billy Beane would definitely pick up Luis Sessa and start him in a playoff game.
Absolutely, 1,000%.
I also enjoyed the fact that the Yankees ended up getting to Morton, really made him work, a couple walks to be able to get to Morton. The Rays go into that doubleheader with Chirinos and Morton, got to be feeling good about themselves, and the Yankees sweep it.
Right. I mean, the death moment for Morton was bases loaded and a balk, which wasn't his fault. Catcher stands up like he's calling time, and time not granted, so Morton stops. And a buck. And like it was clearly on the catcher. He shouldn't have stood up because time was not granted and it was too late.
Was Flaherty talking about how he wants to... Who was talking about getting rid of the balk on Yes?
I don't know. I don't... On that game, I don't even think I had the broadcast on. I was just kind of watching it while I was doing some
work. No, it was in the studio.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Showalter.
Oh, I can see
Showalter doesn't want the balk.
He does... So... What if it's deceiving the runner at one of the bags?
No. He said that shouldn't be a balk, that specific instance.
Oh, that particular?
Yeah. He said, yes, there are balks, but that should not be considered a balk.
But why? The play is still happening. That's the problem. The play was never called dead. So
Showalter just needs something to be angry
yeah,
about.
Yeah, so like there's, I don't know where you go. Like I kind of understand the sentiment because it's like, it's just a mix-up. But the play is still live. Like unless the umpire calls it dead, it's live. So there's really nothing you can do. It's a balk.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Showalter needs to get off that hill.
Buck Showalter, he's being on brand by complaining about something minute.
Right. Yeah.
Colorado comes in. You got Mr. MVP. DJ LeMahieu is my MVP, in case you missed it, were the t-shirts over the weekend. Everyone loved those t-shirts at the event on Saturday. They're probably my favorite shirts that... we've ever made for the events. Very, very cool shirts.
I'm glad everybody liked them. It's funny because it was one of my when I'm putting some designs out. Sometimes I feel good about them. Sometimes I don't. And it's one of those things where I'm probably my toughest critic as far as designs. And I don't like to put out stuff that looks like shit. I just don't. So you really won't see any trash come out. I don't care if I'm first or last. I'll put out something that I feel good about. That one, I was like, I was like, all right with it. I was going after like the old school campaign t-shirts, campaign mm-hmm. posters, but I think it ended up turning out. Everybody liked it, so I'm good with that.
I think what really makes it is LeMahieu, that picture you found of him just looking off into the distance, like yes. like an assassin.
That was my favorite part of like the fact that the image of him looking off is pretty good. It's like yeah. He's like our hope. I kind of love it.
And coming into the series, him and Talkman facing their old team. They went 10 for 20 with 2 homers, 5 RBIs, and 9 runs scored. They tormented their ex-team all weekend. And Talkman has been good since being called up for the London series. He's 10 for 21. It's almost a .500 average since coming up from London, playing good defense, playing left field, playing right field. The way Boone, the way Cashman talks about Talkman, they like Talkman.
They do like Talkman.
You may not like Talkman out there listening because you may want Clint Frazier. I still like Clint Frazier too, but the team likes Talkman.
And if you, I mean, if you still don't believe that defense is a real case in this situation.
I never said it wasn't.
But it's a real thing. It's a real thing because what he does now is he gives you flexibility everywhere in the outfield. And Clint Frazier does not do that. And guess what we're not in short supply of? Hits, runs, offense. What they need to do at a certain point in games is run prevention. They need to make sure that they can defend and make sure that they can make plays. And if you have a guy on the roster who's only an offensive player, a good offensive player, but that's his value. That's his only value, really, because later in the games, you're probably going to take him out if it's close. I'm talking about Clint Frazier. Then that becomes almost a it's a liability in your flexibility. It's a liability in your flexibility.
You sound like Johnny Cochran.
And he doesn't. It's a liability, and he doesn't like it. Boone doesn't like it. Cashman doesn't like it. They don't like it. They don't like having liabilities and the flexibility, right? No. And it's one of those things where Mike Talkman fits the bill now.
Well,
he just fits the team better. Just like LeMahieu fit the lineup, he fits this team better because of the capabilities he does on defense. And if he's hitting like he is now, then there's no controversy at all.
Yeah, that was exactly going to be my point, that the only argument for Clint Frazier was that, well, Talkman can't hit as a major league player, and Clint Frazier was raking. I still don't think Talkman's as good of an offensive player as
Clint
Frazier.
Oh, no, nobody's saying they are. Yeah,
He's not a liability in the lineup and you stick him ninth and he can get on base a couple times and maybe poke a home run every now and again and play good defense. I think I was looking this up. He's provided already 0.7 F war in like something like 45 games played. So that's a couple war player if you extend it to the full season. You're not going to tell me the nerds aren't looking at that saying, oh, look what kind of value we're getting for our 25th man on the roster, our bench guy. And it's going to be a real decision when Maben comes back. He's coming back soon. Maben was the flexibility guy that could play the outfield and was hitting and was running and all that kind of stuff. But if Talkman is doing those same things, what do you do? You're not going to have both of them on the roster. That would be asinine.
Right. Talkman can still be shipped up and down too from Scranton. So that's possible because Cameron Maben cannot.
But
so,
how do you send him down right now when he's producing?
It's a tough decision. Well, it's a roster decision. That's all it is. Like, these guys have to understand that these things are going to have to happen with the way this team is constructed. Like, that was the reason, and I know we'll get to a little bit more on this, but that was one of the reasons why Clint Frazier, you know, it really wasn't necessarily, I mean, certainly you can point to some of the extracurricular things that were a reason why he was sent down. But one of the big reasons, if not the biggest reason, was the way that the roster is, sounded like A-Rod, the roster is constructed, someone had to go down. It just had to happen. So, you know, it's just the way, it's unfortunately the way that the numbers game is right now.
Yeah, and I think what you'll see happen is Maben be placed back on the roster. They'll give him a shot. If he's picks up where he left off, great. If he turns back into a pumpkin, then you know what? Maybe c'est la vie, Cameron Maben.
Yeah, and then it could be Talkman or Frazier if Frazier's still on this team. Then you see them both down there. You see where the team is, what's happening. Maybe they have like a 12-game lead, and we can get Frazier out there and get him going a little bit, get some confidence.
Well, the hope is also at that point Stanton is back. If Stanton's back, he's the left fielder, and Brett Gardner now takes the fourth outfield spot.
That's the thing. You want to make sure you can get Gardner some breathing room towards the end of the season, because don't want to see him fade off, because you think that he's going to be part an integral part of the late season push, the playoff push. He's going to be on the roster, so you want him healthy and ready to go as well.
Because in theory, the best lineup is with Stanton in left and Encarnacion DHing,
right?
Not with Gardner in the outfield, even though Gardner's been on fire since pretty much June 1st.
It's just not your best defensive lineup.
No, but you're not taking Encarnacion or Stan out of a lineup in a playoff game. You're just not going to do it. Encarnacion, since the All-Star break, is 9 for 34. It's a .265 average, nothing special. But he's got 4 homers, 2 doubles, and 14 RBIs. He had the Grand Slam on Friday. That was the Yankees' 31st comeback win of the season. which improve they improve now to 21-16 when opponents score first. Only team in Major League Baseball to have a winning record when the opponent scores first.
That's pretty awesome. That's
I was surprised to see that stat.
That they were the only team. One?
Yeah. You figure Dodgers might get down early. They're going to come back. They've got the second best record, or Minnesota or something. But no, Yankees only team with a winning record in those scenarios.
Yeah, no, I think that says a lot to what this team is, too. I mean, that's the never say we're out of this game, never say die type of attitude. Boone talks about that all the time, how he believes that you're really not out of a game. I mean, you see even on Sunday a four-run game, and they're setting up, they're putting in, pitchers to lock down the game to keep it at a four-run because they might be able to get four runs in the bottom of the ninth. Like, they're just setting things up. Like, there's a feeling that they're never out of it, no matter how high the tally is. Even four runs in the ninth, it's a good mindset.
I was watching in the eighth inning. I had it on mute because I was watching the Hall of Fame inductions on my computer. And then the Yankees, Hicks hits the home run, and they get to within four. And
I'm like, Chapman warming up.
I'm like, what do I do here? Do I put the game volume back on, or Mariano's about to come up? Do I listen to Mariano? I listened to Mariano and kept the game on mute, but it was a question in my mind.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I had to listen to I really, you know, I was trying to think about this. Like, I was in the beginning, I'm like, you know, this is a bad job by baseball having the Yankees on and the Hall of Fame at the same time.
Thank you for bringing this up.
It's a bad job, but I'm also thinking about this. Like, I started thinking about it more. One, it's a long ass ceremony, and the way that the schedule works, like if you put the Yankees later in the day, they're getting out of town, like they're it's a travel. I don't know.
Why not start the ceremony at 11 a.m.
or start it early? Yeah, that's fine too. You could do that.
I was watching, so it started at 1:30. A player did not start speaking until 2:30.
So you started at 11:30 though. Mariano's smack in the middle of like the fourth inning then.
Okay, but
there's not a great solution there. I was thinking about it more, and it was like, unfortunately, there's not a great solution if you have it on the same day, just because it's a long ceremony. But for their own sake,
why not do it on Saturday?
Why not do it earlier anyway? It gets hot. It's in the middle of freaking July. Like, there's a bunch of old dudes out there. Let's knock this down. Let's have like
Cooperstown. So it was only 84. It's like Cooperstown.
Like breakfast at Wimbledon. Let's do breakfast at Cooperstown. You know what I mean? Like, let's have a morning ceremony. We could do that on the East Coast. Who cares about the West Coast? They can watch it taped live. No one's gonna ruin it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you got a couple. Seattle traveled for that. Edgar Martinez. No, I was like actually shocked how many Seattle fans came. I was like, that's a long ass trip. Where do you even fly into? Albany and drive? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Or Boston?
I've been to Cooperstown. I went when I was like 10 or 11 years old, but I don't really know where Cooperstown is.
It's in the middle of absolutely nowhere. It's smack in the middle of upstate. I was there.
Albany
years
has
ago.
To be the biggest major airport then.
Yeah. Is Albany a major airport? I don't know. Whatever. I have no knowledge on this. I've never flown into Albany in my life, so I have no idea. I've never flown to go to Cooperstown. I've only driven.
How many times have you been?
Once. I hadn't gone. So, funny story. I was supposed to go when I was in like sixth grade. We had a whole like a family trip, and for whatever reason, apparently I was just being a big prick, and I was
shocking.
I was just being an asshole to my mom and all these things, and they're like the threat. My parents had been divorced for a while, so on the week every other weekend we would go to my dad's, and the threat was like if you don't behave better, whatever I was doing, I don't remember. Stop being an asshole or you're going to your dad, you're not going to Cooperstown. And I just kept pushing the buttons, apparently. And I got sent to my dad's house and everybody else went to Cooperstown, which is dirty.
Oh, wow.
Which is dirty because nobody else really cared about Cooperstown.
They just did it to spite you.
Only one that really cared. But they had the trip and they went. So I actually did not go at that point. And I still bring that up and hang it over my mother's head. I was like, that's evil. I couldn't have been that bad.
Derek Jeter's next year.
I know.
Maybe we do a July BP crew event in Cooperstown.
There's no maybe about it. I've already started planning it. I've already started lining this thing up.
It is kind of an annoying time of year to do it in Cooperstown, though. Like, why in the middle of July? Why not do it?
There's a bunch of old guys there, and their wives.
No, but why not do it over the All-Star break?
It's just a lot of stuff to pack in. I think it's a lot of things to pack in. Plus, you have all of the, you know, all the people that are at Cooperstown for the Hall of Fame inductions. A lot of them are at the All-Star Game. I mean, think about what they do at the All-Star Game sometimes. They have honorary ceremonies where they bring out some guys, too.
That's 1,000% true. All those writers, all those media personnel, all those former Hall of Famers.
Yeah, especially for the town that they're playing in. Like, all those guys usually come back.
All right, it was a bad idea. Chill. The game on Saturday that we were at, Yankees scored 11 without a home run, which was great. I loved this play by Glaber, where he hits a slow ground ball to left field. Didi was on second at the time. Didi advances to third. The left fielder is just out there taking a sweet-ass time for some God knows reason.
Like for every play, every
quadruple
ball
pumps, lobs the ball back in. Glaber heads up base running. I've criticized Glaber's base running in the past for making mistakes. This was a heads-up play. Takes off for second. Makes the cutoff man make a rush throw. He throws it into the outfield. Didi scores.
It was good. They had a few base running plays like that where they were just taking extra bases because you could see that the sloppiness. I mean, there. So when we're in 205, we have the overhang, and if the ball's against the wall, it's hard to see like what happens, obviously, because it's the vantage point's cut off. But I mean, there were some of these fly balls that were up in the air for a while that looked like they absolutely should have been caught.
And the right fielder just never got there.
Like, what are you doing? And I know there were communications issues on Sunday too with the center fielder and right fielder. So it was strange the way that they were playing that outfield and that they didn't get some of those balls, because you got to think that a lot of the majority of major league outfielders get to some of these balls and they're caught. So I don't know what the hell Colorado was doing.
I think Romine hit a looping fly ball into the right field gap, and it's just like the right fielder just like took a weird roundabout angle to it, and it fell right at his feet. Like, what are you doing?
So there was something also that was brought up when I was listening to Sirius this weekend too. They were talking about the trajectory. They were talking about the juice ball and the amount of home runs and stuff like that too. But they're also talking about how a lot of outfielders, and the guys who have been on their show have talked about this quite often, where they're misreading the ball, where they think the ball is going to be an X spot because it normally is. But in fact, it's like, you know, 3 feet over your head on a line drive because the ball is carrying further. It's just, it's hot. And actually, we saw that with Judge this weekend, too. I think it was Friday night. Might have been Thursday. But there was a line drive that looked like normally he would play well, but kind of misplayed it. And he had to jump. And the ball, it went over his head. Well, the ball went over his head.
There's another one that he had to jump and he almost missed.
So I think the ball is coming off the bat hotter than a lot of these guys are expecting. And some of them are surprising the outfielders. That one was weird because it was a looping, but... You know, who knows what the shadows were doing at that point and what they'll blame. But it's become a thing around the league. I mean, just these guys who talk to players all around the league. That's one of their, you know, one of the things that they've found to be consistent. The outfielders are definitely seeing that the ball is taking different trajectory paths than it normally has. So
the smooth balls.
Verlander's not wrong.
Speaking of smooth balls, you want smooth balls out there. Boy, do we have a company for you. You got to check out Manscaped. So we have a new advertiser on the show, and it is sometimes we get scripts sent and you got to read it verbatim. Other times you get a company that says, have fun with it. So Manscaped is exactly what you think it is. It is to take care of your nether regions. It is a trimmer, different sorts of ointments, different sorts of products.
Deodorant.
Yep. I tested the ball deodorant on Saturday, and I think it got me through the day.
Okay.
But the Lawnmower 2.0 is the proprietary skin-safe technology that they created, so this trimmer will not nick your sack or nuts. If you are down there, and you know, it can get hairy, no pun intended, but pun intended, it's a little nerve-wracking. You want something that you can know you can go down there.
Especially if you're a first timer.
Yeah. But you want to know there you can go down there and you can go to town in confidence. You do not want your balls looking like Kurt Schilling's sock. You do not want to take your pants off with a lady, whether it's your wife, your fiance, your girlfriend, or just a lady you meet out somewhere. And you do not want to be nicked. That would be bad news.
Yeah. No, these are things you got to think about. So Manscaped has a lot of very good products, and you know, I think personally, even if it's not something that you're trying to use in other regions, you can use another. It's a flexible product. Now, I don't recommend using it both, but if you're trying to go one way or the other, you could do that. So there's things that can happen above the belt and below the belt.
I mean, the t-shirt literally says your balls will thank you. I'm holding it up right now.
Yeah.
But the Yankees don't allow beards.
Nope.
Why are you going to have a beard down below?
It's true.
I tested out the crop preserver ball deodorant on Saturday. So I was looking through the products. They sent us a nice package. Yes. They sent us a nice assortment of things, and one of them is a ball deodorant, and it says anti-chafing ball deodorant, and yep. It's going to be 100 degrees. I'm going to be sitting outside at Yankee Stadium.
Really the perfect day.
I'm like, this is perfect. I'm taking this for a test spin. And I think it worked because I got a comment late in the game. Someone said, hey, you didn't sweat through your shirt. You're like the only person to not sweat through your shirt. And I only used the ball deodorant on my balls. But you know how if like a certain part of your body gets hot, it makes other areas of your body sweat?
So you're thinking this was like the center point for yes. the cooling of your body.
I kept the core cool and it spread. I also sat in the shade most of the game, unlike
yes, you
your
did.
Stupid ass sitting out in the sun like
20%,
a psychopath.
20% off and free shipping with code Bronx at manscaped.com. Always, always use the right tools for the job. Your balls will thank you.
Thanks for reining that in, because I was going to keep going. I had so many ball jokes.
I know.
I've been thinking about them for like 3 days. Tanaka, everything has been positive with this team. Like literally everything.
So don't do it. Don't do it.
No, I have to talk about Tanaka and Paxton, because Tanaka was so good through five innings. Like so efficient, had his pitch count low. I think there were... how many base runners? I think three base runners, two hits.
We kept looking up the at the pitch count. We're like, damn, he is cruising.
Like 65 pitches or something like that through five innings. He had only allowed two hits, and then the Rockies put up a five spot in the sixth inning on a single, double, walk, three run home run, double, single.
Yeah,
how does that happen when you've been so dominant? I understand the heat probably affected him. And yes. It's a huge lead at that point. The Yankees are crushing the ball. So
throw strikes.
Maybe you're like, if you're Tanaka, if you're Boone, you're like, do I want to send Tanaka back out there? And then you look at the pitch count and you look at the scenario. I'm like, he's barely broken a sweat, like even though it's 100 degrees out. But he goes out there and he just completely loses it. Boone said his splitter was flat and he lost command of his pitches. Why does this keep happening to him in the middle of the games? Because... blow up innings for him has been a real problem. And I'm excluding London in this. I know you say throw London out. I'm going to throw London out. Tanaka has still allowed four or more earned runs in a single inning in six different games this year.
Yeah, no, it's just so weird how that happens in bulk in a one spot in a game. And you could tell, look, he goes out there. And like you said, it's 100 degrees outside. They have a huge lead. So what does he do? And we've always said this. Tanaka always when he has a lead or if there's nobody on base, he'll challenge you way more often than if there's guys on. I mean, like that's a duh moment, but he does it probably more than anybody else. He will come over the plate. He has no problem giving up a solo home run. He just doesn't have that problem. So he comes in here, he's throwing strikes. Like I'm just going to pepper the zone, throw strikes. And if they hit it, you know, the guys behind me will play some defense. Law of averages, will probably get out of the inning. Maybe they score two or three runs. Unfortunately, there was a three-run home run sprinkled in there as well, and he just couldn't get anything done. And I think the heat does play into it. I think when you're out there every inning, it adds up and adds up and adds up, and you get out there for another one, the fatigue can get into you, and if you can't find it, I feel like it could snowball. But it's not just today. It's hard to just blame the heat because it's happened other times.
Right.
So it's one of those things that is concerning when he does lose it. It goes.
And that's concerning for a playoff scenario because you can overcome a four or five run inning when you're putting up 11 on the Colorado Rockies' crappy pitching staff. What happens if you get into a division series and you're playing a good team and he gives up a four spot in the second inning? What are you going to do?
Right. And that's the thing. Like that's where I think a lot of this stuff where Cashman's going to go out there and make moves for pitching, whether it's a starter or a reliever, you're going to see these scenarios play out. And unfortunately with Tanaka, he's one of our probably best chances of getting deep into a game.
He'd get game one start right now if the playoffs started.
But he's also the best chance of us getting deep into a game with a starter at this point. And well, him and Hermana, I guess you could say, if there's no innings limit, but when Tanaka's giving up these big spots in the middle of a game, there's going to be
They're not going to let him battle through it.
There's also going to be times where you see who's coming up. It's the fifth inning. You're like, his pitch count's like this. The numbers against these guys maybe aren't as great. There could be a hard decision where they're looking at the analytics. The analytics are supporting taking him out, and you could see him pulled. I'm just like, that's the type of scenario where you just need arms to go out there and battle, whether it's starter or reliever. And I think this team fits that dynamic more than any other team because these starters don't go deep. And I know that's a something that throughout the league, but really for this Yankees team, it's a very real narrative that we're going to have to watch throughout the rest of the season to see if any of these guys can get more depth and prove that they can go deeper into games with success.
I'm identifying Tanaka and Paxton right now as the two guys who should be doing it. And Paxton was...
how could you not put Herman in there? You throw the innings limit out. Herman is the best pitcher on this team right now.
He's been the best
pitcher on this team all year.
But even when Herman, he hasn't gone more than six innings ever.
I think he's got
one start more than six innings. So you're gonna
when you're in a playoff scenario though, it's
they're not gonna extend him past six innings.
Well, I think
no shot on, in hell.
It depends on pitch count. It depends where he is, but he's. If there's no innings limit and he's going well and Herman's on his game, like I could see them absolutely going.
Nope.
But again,
no shot.
Scenarios.
Nope, there's no shot. They will push Tanaka because of the track record. They might push Paxton if he can prove something in the next 2 months. Herman, five innings, maybe six innings. They're not gonna do it with him until he proves he can do it. He hasn't proved he could do it. I know it's partially because of the innings limit, but it's also really his first full season. Mm-hmm. So I just think they're gonna get what they can out of him and move on, and I'm fine with that. He's their most effective pitcher, but he's not, I don't think, a guy they're going to be leaning on to be the dominant ace of a playoff series.
I'm not even talking about being that. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about guy giving you the best opportunity. And If we're not seeing him stretch out into the seventh, eighth inning, even when he's capable of it in the regular season, it will be because of innings limits. It'll be because of pitch count. It's not to say that he can't do it. It's not to say that he doesn't have the ability to do it and that he wouldn't be strong coming out in another inning. I think they're really just trying to temper that. What I'm saying is, in a scenario in the playoffs, pitch count's out the window for the most part. Innings limits out the window. It's what are you doing right now? What are the matchups looking like? How many times are you through the lineup? What is the break doing on your ball? I think all of that comes more into play in a playoff short game, short series scenario where I could see them, you know, pushing him a little bit more if everything else were in line. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think he's got the ability to do that. And even in the regular season, I still think he has the ability to do that. I just don't think they're going to let him get to that point in the regular season. Could see it maybe pushing it. But again, all of this goes down and comes out of the game when you're looking at all of these different metrics and you're looking at who's available and you think that in a short series, most guys are available, right? Like the majority of these guys are available at that point. And you have savages in the bullpen too. Those guys could come in and do their job because that's what they're getting paid for. So that's where the scenarios go out the window of getting a guy deep in a game. Like why do you need to do that? Because you have this bullpen. That's the reason it's there.
Yeah. It's just, it scares me going with Tanaka and his blow up inning capabilities and Paxton and his inconsistency. He gave up seven runs on Sunday, looked bad from the start, lead off home run to Blackman, which is the second game in a row he's allowed a lead off home run, first inning problems, but it wasn't just first inning. Yes, had a great stat on the broadcast. Batters leading off innings get on base at a .364 clip against Paxton. It is way too high. He walked two leadoff batters in this game. Both came around to score. He beats himself in those scenarios. Yes, he still strikes people out, and he can still overpower a hitter. But with the walks and the deep counts and the struggles in the first inning, I can't trust him. I'm sorry. I can't trust him.
And some of these balls, if you look at the replays, too, of where these pitches were, the Blackman home run was over the plate. you know, some of the double that scored two was over the plate. Like, he's missing out over the plate as well. And when you're falling behind and you're trying to hit corners and you're out over the plate, you're gonna get hit around. I don't care how hard you're throwing, it doesn't matter. That none of these guys care about that. They can all hit 100 miles over the plate. If they know a fastball is coming, if they're looking fastball and there's something that's significantly over the plate and it's 100 miles an hour, it doesn't matter. They're gonna hit the ball. So you have a guy that struggled. And Boone was even talking about this in the press conference afterwards. Like, he's aware, they're all aware that it takes him longer sometimes to ramp up for some reason and that they got to figure it out.
I think they tried something different yesterday.
Yeah. Well, for the most part, they're Boone talking about how he has been good throughout the year because you see the bright spots. You see the opportunities where Paxton comes out there and does well. And then you see, and again, like that's kind of goes back to the Herman praise where you see him give up two home runs early and then buckles down. But unfortunately with Paxton, it's just too often and too consistent with his struggles in the first inning. Like it's getting to a point that's ridiculous. Like, I'm not happy that you're battling back anymore. I just want you to figure it out in the first inning and get through a clean inning so that we can see a clean outing.
Yeah. And for the most part, you look at his last like seven starts. It's remarkably consistent at like six innings, two or three runs, and then a couple blowups in the middle. But it's the deep pitch counts, it's the high pitch count by the fifth and sixth inning that makes me worried going forward. I don't know what they're going to do with the trade deadline. They're going to do something.
What are we, 9 days now?
Ten days? It's in 10 days if you include Monday. But I look at the starting staff, and as good as this team has been, as fun as this team has been to watch, all the comeback wins, the Savages moment, the offense, the fact that they have a massive lead in the division, I'm still extremely concerned with this starting pitching going into October.
It's the area of weakness, and it's so very clear. So I think we all understand that Brian Cashman is going to address it one way or another, whether it's relief pitching, starting pitching, however he's going to do it. He's going to address this pitching staff to a point that I think gives them more depth. Again,
he has to. It would be complete negligence if he doesn't.
Right. And theoretically, we're looking at Betances, who does look like he's ramping up and hopefully going to come back. That's another humongous arm coming out. Again, I don't think anybody's counting on Severino, but if you can get that, that's nice. But you got to make that move to bolster, whether it's Stroman or if they do go after a guy, Boyd or Minor with Texas. Like, there are people and guys you can go out there and make some moves, but Scherzer's not in there. Bumgarner still on the table. Like, if they hit a little bit of a losing streak these next 10 days are going to be
San
very
Fran
important.
Has like gone on a winning streak somehow. Yeah. Like,
but they have to understand, like, are they still in it even if they're vying for a second wild card spot? Like, are you really still in it?
That owner is kind of stubborn.
The thing is when we see what happens in these next 10 days, there could be more guys open and available
sure.
for trade. So it'll be interesting to see who is. But they're definitely scouting Marcus Stroman. There's no doubt about it. They're sending guys out there to see what he's doing.
They're also apparently were heavily scouting Noah Syndergaard.
I mean, come on. I don't even want to mess around with that.
Yeah. Speaking of trades, so Coley Harvey spoke with Clint Frazier and had a couple of interesting quotes that he got from him. So Frazier spoke with Cashman on the phone recently, and Frazier said, he was honest with me. I walked away from that conversation feeling really good about my present situation and my future situation. And then Harvey said he remains optimistic that his future is in pinstripes and not as a trade chip entering the upcoming deadline. So do you think this is Brian Cashman just giving Frazier some positive reinforcement to keep him mentally engaged?
Well, I think it's definitely part of that for sure. I mean, I think Cashman has a really good idea of who some players are. And I think when they traded for Clint Frazier, they knew who he was. They knew he wasn't the Aaron Judge, Derek Jeter type to be in the New York Yankees, wear the pinstripes and walk the company line and do all these things. They knew he was a little different. They knew he was a good talent that maybe there were going to be some little deviations from the pinstripe path that everybody else takes. So I think having open communication and talking to him, I think that's one of the reasons why Reggie Jackson early on, you know, reached out and kind of took him under his wing and was talking to him like, you have one of those legends, come in and build that bond. That's important. So the talking back and forth, I think it's good. I think it says a lot about Cashman, how he takes a true He's all in on some of these guys in the approach. Like he will get his hands dirty and talk to players about what's going on. Like the communication line are open. And I think that's really important for a GM, especially surrounding the trade deadline with a player that, you know, has some immaturities, I think. And, you know, I think that communication and making sure that they understand each other is very important because his mind can run with things.
If you had to put a percent...
Toxoplasmosis is a severe... By the way, we were talking to a couple people at the bar that were toxoplasmosis. Unfortunately, they had it. Yeah, you know, we were looking at swollen joints and looking all sorts of different symptoms. And
do they have cats?
Yeah, unfortunately. Lots of cats.
Do they sleep with them?
I told them the cats are farting on their pillows. Need to get rid of the cats. Number one step, get rid of the cats. Get a dog.
So
that'll put you on the right path.
If you had to put a percent on Frazier gets traded or not traded?
I think it's 50-50. I think they still like the player. I really do. But at the same time, if a deal comes up and Frazier's the guy that gives them a pitcher that's going to make a significant difference in this year and probably one more year, I still think there needs to be some element of control with that pitcher to give up a guy like Frazier. I think they would still pull the trigger.
You think they want to trade Frazier in like a Stroman deal where you're going to have to face him multiple times this season?
I don't think that matters as much.
You don't think so?
To Cashman, I don't think it matters as much. I think they're trying to get... I don't think they're worried about that because they know how good their team is right now. And if a guy is going to hit, you know, against them on Toronto, like, add it to the list. There's a couple guys over there. They'll probably hit. But I don't think that matters at all. I think he's very squarely focused on 2019, winning a World Series, and the fact that Clint Frazier would be on the Toronto Blue Jays hitting doesn't affect that at all.
So, another thing that Coley talked to him about was the 72 hours he took to report to Scranton after his demotion. Frazier said, I took it because, one, I have two animals, cats in a full apartment. I needed a day, and then one day turned into I'm going to take another day. And then it was like, I'm not in my best frame of mind right now. I was mad. I was upset. I was bitter. It was one of those things where I needed to be able to come down here and be ready to work. I would have shown up day one and probably would have been a nuisance to be around. I would have been upset. I was still mourning my demotion. I wasn't trying to send a message to Cashman.
I believe that, actually, because I don't think... What do you do? If he's trying to send a message, he's doing it the wrong way. And I think he's smart enough to understand that part of it. But I think this actually shows... Maybe this shows a little bit more of a glimpse into the mind of Clint Frazier. He didn't talk to the media after he messed up. Why? Because he knew he would probably say something stupid and he was mad. And rather than trying to control those emotions while people are pecking you with questions, he decided that it was best for him to take himself out of that situation. Okay, maybe that's better for him. Like maybe that internally, like you thought that was the best decision. Okay, the fact that he's talking about, see, look, this is all good. Communication is nice. Now we understand why you do things, and I feel like things are a little bit more clear. Just the fact that we don't, and that's part, unfortunately, it was talking to the media was the reason we didn't understand it and kind of snowballed. But when you put it in context and when you say things like this, okay, you're a young guy, hothead, mad because you're passionate, you want to be up there. Like, I think they're all intentions are good because you want to compete, you want to be on the Yankees, so you're mad about it. I get that. I kind of like that. That's fire. That's passion. And you know what? He had to take himself out because he knows himself. He knows that he would have been bad.
There's two ways to look at this. The fact that he's self-aware, and that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
Or is that immaturity?
Well, I think he's self-aware that there's an immaturity.
Okay, so it's both.
Yeah. But acknowledgement and identifying what that is and seeing... How, if you can identify and you know yourself well enough that you're probably going to say something dumb or do something dumb or just look the wrong way and taking yourself out of that, maybe that was the mature thing to do for him. Because maybe it could have been tenfold worse. Who knows?
Yeah. Do you have any more thoughts on the Hall of Fame? So Mariano kicked off his with, I don't understand why I always have to be last. And that kind of got a big, big chuckle from the crowd. Messina, there was a quote in here. I did not see Messina's speech.
But I heard it. I listened to it.
All right. So apparently he said, maybe I was saving up from all of those almost achievements for one last push, and this time I made it. So almost achievements being almost winning Cy Youngs, almost winning championships, et cetera.
So I kind of took that a different way. I thought that was a weird quote, in all honesty. And I know a lot of Mussina fans were like, oh, yeah, oh, man. Like, Frank was, like, tearing up, like, listening to that. Tighten it up, Frank. But the he's like, well, I was I made one last push. Well, you didn't. Like, everything else did. Like, your numbers did. Like, they spoke. They you didn't make that push. Like, your numbers just that were almost there, like, made that a little bit harder to get you in, but so I didn't really understand that quote, honestly. Like, there was no effort after your numbers were done, you know, whether it's lobbying or what. So your lobbying efforts were good. It was just a weird quote for me. I took it the wrong way. And he's very dry when he talks, and that's been known. Like, he's been, I think, a hard interview for some guys, just because he's very dry and very, very matter of fact in the way he does things. And that's just the way he's always been. It's just his personality. But yeah, I don't know. It was a weird quote for me.
So A-Rod posted a video on his Instagram of talking about all the Hall of Famers, and the one about Mussina, he talked about how when he first came over to the Yankees, he was very intimidated by Mussina because I guess Mussina had dominated him, just head-to-head matchups, and Mussina was not talkative.
He's quiet, yeah. He's very matter-of-fact. Went to Stanford.
Yeah, stayed to himself, had this reputation of being very smart. He is very smart. And then one day, just sort of out of the blue, he started talking to A-Rod about his struggles at the plate and, like, what he's seeing A-Rod do and not do. And apparently, like, it helped A-Rod get out of a slump. Like, he had some really good points. And then he's like, and it blossomed into this beautiful friendship, and we would go out to dinners, and we would talk about investments and family and all this stuff, and how he loves Mike Mussina after he finally came over and just, like, helped him out with his swing.
So here's how I interpret this. A-Rod, while on the Yankees, was intimidated by Mike Mussina. Like, that's weird. Because he literally just came off of, like, an MVP season, right? So you're okay.
A-Rod's so Mussina, not the most Mussina's strong, like, strong mental.
Mussina's like, this guy's literally too much of a bitch to come over and talk to me. So I'm just gonna go over and talk to him. Like, clearly, I have information for him. He's too scared to talk to me, so I got to go make this move. He was probably worried about being judged, because maybe Moose knew something, you know. Maybe Moose knew something about, you know, some things. He's a smart guy, picks up on things, you know, a lot of perception.
He's got eyes on everyone. Apparently, the way he did it, A-Rod was taking fielding practice at third base, and Mussina just slowly walked from center field and just stood behind A-Rod, like 10 feet behind him.
Made him all nervous.
With his arms folded, until A-Rod was like, what the hell are you doing? And he goes, I need to talk to you.
That's great. There's some other ones too. A-Rod was talking about the A-Rod's been all over the place talking about Alex. He loves this stuff.
Oh,
good,
yeah.
For him. You know, whatever. As much as I'm not a big A-Rod guy, he's at this point harmless. But his stories to me are embellished. Although I was wrong about one of them. The story about Mo, where the worst place to be was in the clubhouse during a game, because apparently Rivera would sit in there and watch the video and kind of, like, prepare mentally to go out into the bullpen when he was ready. So if, like, you have to go take a dump, or you got to go to the bathroom or whatever, and you're going, and then all of a sudden, oh shit, Mo's there, and he catches you, and apparently he would just, like, go after it. Like, what are you doing? Like, calling him out, like, the ball is too low. Why are you swinging at these pitches? Blah, blah, blah. But he said that was like one. It was like the firing range if you walk back in there, because Rivera would get on you, and he was one of those guys that would expect, you know, excellence from everybody and really push the envelope. But I love that. I love hearing that. Some of the things that Mo was saying was really cool. The fact that he had an open tryout to go on the Yankees in Panama. I think he was 20 years old. Like, think about that. Think about that age now. If you're 20 and they don't know who you are, like, you're not going to play baseball now. Right? Like, you're probably not going to play baseball if you're 20 years old, because there's eyes everywhere now. But the fact that he walked on, you know, to this, he was, went for an open tryout.
Had a hole in his cleats.
Hole in his cleats, didn't have a glove.
Like, barely had, like, equipment. And, I mean, basically, he said the reason they signed me is because I could throw. I couldn't pitch. I could throw.
Right, exactly. So they saw an arm, and the fact that the cutter, I mean, there's everybody
the
Cutter knows
story is legendary, where it's just like, just kind of figured it out by accident in the bullpen.
And they tried to fix it. They tried to fix
struggling, it. A struggling starting pitcher who they're like, hey, we don't want you to have that cut on your fastball that they realized was unhittable.
That's traded,
almost taken in the Rule 5 draft, almost traded. Number of different scenarios with Rivera that if one of those went a different way, he's not 100%, you know, 100% voted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, had to earn his job like a couple times. Like this guy was, he was no shoo-in, and the fact that he came in and was this Mr. Consistent for the pretty much the day he took that job as the closer, and really even into the eighth inning guy, because he was going one, two innings occasionally.
Well,
even
his best closer job. Many people say his best season was 1996 when he was setting up for Wetland,
yeah,
because he would routinely go two innings.
Yep.
And he, I mean, it was the best season when you look at like total, I think like total war accrued and all that kind of stuff, because he pitched more.
Right.
He was extremely dominant, extremely valuable as a weapon in the bullpen. And of course, because it's 2019 and it's the internet, there was this like takedown article of Rivera going around Twitter yesterday morning for his politics and his very strict religious beliefs.
Oh, I didn't see that. I ignore that shit.
I started to read it just because I was like, what is this asshole? It was on the Daily Beast. I'm sure people saw it, but I was just like, what can you say bad about Rivera? And they're talking about his politics and how his stance, I'm not going to get too political, stance on Israel and his dealings with Trump and all that stuff. And it's like, okay, that's enough to warrant a takedown article on the guy on the Hall of Fame morning. It's just like, I hate that the internet just tries to
different
cancel people. You know that term?
Buck.
Cancel, yeah. Culture tried to cancel people. It's like, can you just shut the hell up for a second and let the guy get inducted into the Hall of Fame? Please, please, can we do that? Can we not be assholes for 24 hours?
No, you gotta get clicks. People gotta get clicks. Either way, whatever. It was good. I thought the speeches were good. I think Edgar Martinez is extremely, extremely, you know, one of the best hitters I've ever seen. When I was younger, I used to marvel at the way that he could hit. And everybody pretty much has talked about that. And so now that it kind of opened the door, I think, for Harold Baines too, because of the DH spot. Like that was one of the big reasons why this was the year that they got Harold Baines in.
And it also will set a precedent for Ortiz.
Well, probably. I mean, the fact Edgar Martinez opened up doors right there. I mean, the fact that he's in now and he was basically a full-time DH for the majority of his career opens a lot of doors for people saying like, this is now a position in the Hall of Fame.
He deserves to be in.
He absolutely deserves to be in. He was one of the best hitters of his era. There's no doubt about it. So anybody who says different wasn't watching
300
or has a weird bias against DH.
300, 400, 500 career slash line.
Yeah. No, like he was ridiculous. He was awesome.
Yankees are heading to Minnesota and then Boston, 7-game road trip. So interesting about Minnesota. They got off to an amazing start. They've been kind of iffy since the beginning of June, 15-12 in June, 6-8 in July, and they're 4-6 in the last 10 games. Yankees didn't face Berrios the last time they played Minnesota. They're not going to face Berrios again this series. Going to be facing Perez, Gibson, and Odorizzi. So still not facing Minnesota's best. That's the, you know, the best case for Minnesota of that they're legit is that in a playoff series, they can throw Berrios twice at you and he can shut you down and they can hit some home runs.
We're not going to see Pineda. Is Pineda still alive? Is he pitching over there?
Not. Oh, yeah. He's still cranking along. ERA. I think he lowered his ERA to like 4.6.
Oh, good for him. Good for him. They're not seeing as many inflatable arms
and
flying in the wind.
Yankees pitching announcements are CC, Herman, and Hap.
Something we didn't talk about quickly. Hap, we didn't really talk about Hap much, but I just want to touch on him. I think he came out and pitched well on, was that Friday night? Pitched well on Friday night and got through. You know what he needed to
struggled
do.
Struggled in the first inning, kind of got out of a first and third jam, minimized damage, and I mean he. I put his line in here. Let me find it. So five innings, 8 hits, 2 runs, 8 strikeouts.
Yeah. So I mean, look, he got deeper into the game. I think when you see what Hap has done,
it's 5 innings
compared to some starts that he doesn't make 5 innings. It was but that look, I think that like we need to see progression from him, and I think that that's a good start, and I like it. So I'm happy with
it's an acceptable start from James Paxton, from J Hap. It's not acceptable for like Tanaka or Paxton. That's what I have been saying. If Sabathia and Hap are giving you 5 innings
right.
and keeping you in the game. Great. Those are your 4 and 5 starters. They need the top guys to do better. Be better, Paxton. Be better, Tanaka. Herman, you've been great. That's all I'm saying.
The last thing, DJ LeMahieu, another home run Sunday. What is that, 14 now?
Yeah, on pace for 22, I think.
23. Watch it. 23 home runs on pace for 23.
I mean, it's the smooth balls.
It's DJ LeMahieu being an unbelievable pro. That's all it is.
Foresight. ready to do a couple mailbags before we get out of here?
Yeah.
Before we do that, guys, just want to remind you to rate and review the podcast. Very appreciative when you guys do it. I know a few more reviews came in over the weekend. It really helps us out. It lets us know. It lets you guys. I can't talk. Scott, you say it.
Just rate and review the podcast. If you listen to us and you enjoy what you hear, do us a favor. Go on iTunes and give us 5 stars. Give us a little bit of a blurb on why you like the show. And again, it does help us out. Tell a friend. Tell them to subscribe. And we'll keep going. We'll keep talking on the microphone so you guys can listen. Some of us will talk in full sentences. Some of us won't.
Yeah. Maybe you guys can comment on how I can talk perfectly fine when I'm talking about baseball and something that happened. But when I have to read something or
talking about
something.
No, talking about your balls, you were fine.
Oh, yeah.
You had no problem talking about your balls.
All right. Setu Saha at Dat Dude Stew on Twitter. He has 2 questions. Number one, do you think Boone's savage comment dissuaded any voters for manager of the year? And number two, with the Yankees scouting all these starters, could it be subterfuge by having another team overpay for one because the Yankees are interested? Sounds like he used a thesaurus on this tweet.
Or he's just got good control of the English language that we don't. Look, I think, no, I don't think it affects in a negative way for any of the
letters. I didn't understand that. Why would that affect in a negative
way? Well, maybe because old guys are like, you know, perumph, you know, you're saying the F word, you're being condescending.
Aaron Boone's not going to win manager of the year, not because of that. It's because he manages the Yankees, and it's next to impossible to win manager of the year.
But not this year. Not this year. That's out the window because of all the injuries.
Rocco Baldelli will win manager of the year.
That's possible.
No, it's 100% what's going to happen. The Minnesota Twins were not expected to be leading their division, and they are.
Unless, and what is probably a foregone conclusion, if I were to be make another prediction, I would predict that the Minnesota Twins will crumble like the Minnesota Twins.
They make the playoffs.
In a wild card spot? No, I don't think that's manager of the year.
If they win their division.
That puts you up there. Otherwise, it's Boone.
What about Cash? I mean, Cash, I think.
No, God no.
Why God no?
Because Aaron Boone is dominating him with injured players.
Aaron Boone and the Yankees are supposed to win.
Not with injured players. That's the difference. This year, they have pretty much the first half played with a very different roster. They did not play with the New York Yankees that anybody else was expecting. They played with a AAA lineup, essentially, with pitching not going their way. Injuries galore.
I know.
And
I
Boone
know, but
steadied the ship.
I'm not saying this is justified, but writers I think these scenarios are biased against the Yankees.
I get it. I get normally, but I think in this season there is
a
very different
feel.
Maybe
this is the one off year. Maybe.
Yeah, I definitely.
But I don't think the savage comment, if anything, that helps.
Oh no, it gave them something to write about that got a ton of clicks. They love it.
So I don't know if he's saying because, like you said, some writers don't like that sort of attitude. But no, I mean. I mean, they loved Lou Piniella for that kind of stuff. They loved like all these old classic managers who would have these tirades like this.
Yeah,
like,
I think it's a good thing.
Jim Leland and like all these guys. Like, no, this helps them.
And it is a very good argument, honestly, about the whole robotic strike zone. The fact that these will go away. It's a great argument. Because I don't want
you
them
mean
to go away.
In favor of not doing. Yeah.
Like, give me some bad calls just so that we can get things like this.
Give me I'll tolerate like a 5% error rate. Once you creep up above 10%, no thanks. Like, right. I'm done.
Yeah.
So number two, are the Yankees, is the price, so the trade deadline is 10 days away, and right now, by all accounts, the price on these starting pitchers is astronomical. But there's a few, you got the Rangers and Mike Minor out there on the block. You got, are the Giants going to trade Bumgarner? You got, what are the Indians going to do?
Arizona.
Obviously, Stroman, the Mets with Wheeler. And possibly Syndergaard, Arizona with Robbie Ray.
Wheeler has shoulder issues currently. Who the hell is going after him?
Okay. There's multiple pitchers out there who are going to be on the trade block, and there's a handful of teams going after these pitching. Right now, it's a very high price for these starting pitchers. No one wants to be the... So you gotta, if you're team trading, you want to be first because that will probably get you the biggest haul because you set the market. If you're the team acquiring, you don't want to be first because you're going to be paying the most. You want to be second or third. You want to say, okay, Bumgarner just got traded for XYZ. That's a way overpay. Here's what I'm offering you for Marcus Stroman. This is fair. Take it or leave it. And that means the Blue Jays just had a team come off the board because, say, the Twins acquired Madison Bumgarner or something like that.
No, it's a big deal. I mean, I think we're going to see this thing play all the way out to the final hour, the final minutes. Because there is no August deadline any longer, now we're seeing all of the action on this deadline, which makes it exciting. I think the last few days are going to be fireworks. But I think a lot of these GMs now are just basically playing a big game of chicken. And who's going to blink first? Like, are you going to give me who I'm asking for because I'm asking for a lot? Or are you going to stand pat and just wait me out and basically call the bluff of other teams that you don't think are offering as much or have as much value than what you're offering me are going to blink first. So it's whoever blinks first. But you're right. I think the first whoever sets the market, I think we'll probably see things happen a lot faster after that. But that first domino to fall, unless there's a really aggressive offer, at some point, and one of these GMs is like, I'm not going to get a better offer than this, and they pull the trigger, I think we're going to see it go down to the final hours.
We haven't really even talked about Mike Minor a lot. He's having a pretty good season for the Rangers. He's 31. He's a free agent after 2020. He's got a 2.7 WAR, which is great. 2.86 ERA, which is great. But then you look at some of his other numbers, 4.09 FIP and 4.38 XFIP. And he's walking a lot of guys, so his K to walk ratio is not great. So what, his walk rate per nine is not great. 3.1 walks per nine innings. What are your thoughts on Mike Minor? Is he a guy that is sort of like the next rung down where you're going to have to not pay as much and you'll accept?
I mean, he's a guy that's going to eat some innings. That's why I look at it. I see him as like a...
He's not somebody to get excited about?
There's no doubt. I mean, I'm not getting excited about him. He reminds me of like in the beginning when we were doing the offseason plan, like one of the guys that I was circling as a guy like this was Kyle Gibson, who is having a pretty good season with Minnesota, but has always been like, nothing to get excited about, but started ramping up a little bit more with his numbers. I think later in his career than some would expect. So you're seeing more success. I think Miner's a similar guy. Honestly, the funny thing is that the guy on Texas to look at is Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn's going out there throwing 97, 98 miles an hour. Apparently, has figured out how to pitch. Has done a lot of things. Is fully rebounded from Tommy John surgery. Like, that's the guy. But they have him under what, 3 years, $30 million, or 4 years, $40 million. It was a $10 million contract for however many years, 3 or 4 years. So you're thinking that maybe if he has figured it out, that they have a guy that they like now under control for a while. So probably not going to be a guy that they're going to trade at this point. Never know.
Lance Lynn was in my offseason plans.
Yeah, he's a guy that is good. I mean, I didn't mind him. Like, he's not a needle mover by any means, but this year he looks like he might be. Maybe he has figured it out. He's a big, big country hoss.
I got an email from Jeff, angry about Cashman. You'll love this one. Just read an article about Billy Bean. He may be overrated, but at least he's not Cashman, who enters every season with a great offense, a superb defense, an above-average pen, virtually unlimited resources, and still fails to secure anything above a mediocre starting rotation, and watches the Yankees fall to lesser teams with a better starting rotation. It has become predictable, and I am a lifelong Yankees fan. So
I feel like there's always the justification at the end there, and and I love the Yankees.
And so it's like the sports radio callers. They have to sit first.
I'm a 60-year fan. Yep. I've been listening to you for
Mike. I've been watching the Yankees since 1965.
Yeah. Clearly, I know what I'm talking about.
I went back and looked. Went back and looked at the Yankees ranks in Major League Baseball for three things as far as starting pitching goes: WAR, ERA, and K to walk ratio. And the reason I picked these three stats, obviously, WAR is like an amalgamation. Is that a word? What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Total of everything. How much value is the starting rotation bringing the team? ERA, very classic. Lower ERA, the better. And K to walk ratio, which is a measure of effectiveness. Are you striking out? What's your walk rate? What's your strikeout rate, etc. So Yankees rank 2019, 13th in WAR, middle of the pack. 11th in ERA, middle of the pack. 6th in K to walk ratio. That's good. Quickly, I'm going to run down for WAR in 2018, 4th. 2017, 5th. 2016, 13th. 2015, 12th. There's a trend here. Stay with me. 2018 for ERA, 14th. 2017, 5th. 2016, 19th. 2015, 19th. And then K to walk ratio, 7th. 4th, 7th, 7th.
All around 3.
Yep. Do you see a trend with any of these?
Just say it, because I'm not even trying to guess with all these numbers you just threw out.
They're
because nobody else sees the trend either.
They're the same pitching staff every year.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
So for the last 5 years, they've been the same pitching staff. They are around 3 in K-to-walk ratio, which ranks around the top 7th in Major League Baseball. For ERA, they're going to be middle of the pack. The one outlier is 2017 when they had an under 4 ERA and they were 5th. Otherwise, they're mid-teens. And then for WAR, they are,
there's discrepancies in there.
Middle of the pack. 2017, 2018, they were higher. They were 5th and 4th. But this year, they're back to middle of the pack. It's a very consistently okay starting rotation.
I mean, look, Cashman's definitely been better at securing offense and making those these gems bullpen.
His best area is the bullpen, in my opinion.
I think he scouts position players very well. I mean, you look at with Didi and Voit.
Fine.
And
but think about
are we throwing Tauchman in there because he's approaching
those,
that?
Think about those shitty years,
Urshela,
in like 13 and 14, and they somehow didn't really miss a beat when Mariano Rivera retired. They're like, oh, Mariano Rivera is going to miss a season. They had Rafael Soriano. Mariano Rivera retires. Oh, we can go to David Robertson. And then we acquire the big three, Miller, Betances, Chapman. And now the bullpen for the last 2 years has been like the best, most effective bullpen in baseball. So there's a couple
ways you could look at that then. You could look at the fact that Brian Cashman identified as the value in the bullpen, and that's the way that they were going to build the team out. And maybe not spend as much in starting pitching because you have to, one, spend a lot of money on starting pitching, and there's a lot of discrepancy in what you get in return for paying a lot of money. I mean, it's not a guarantee when you pay a boat ton of money and give them a lot of years for the return over that span. CC has been definitely one of those contracts that has worked out really, really well. But you can point at a number of them that have not worked out, and you could probably do that across the league.
He definitely sees the value. He sees more value in acquiring bullpen. Right. It's less money, and it's less risk.
It's also shorter contracts,
right?
More flexibility.
And if one guy falters, you got other guys.
Right. So that, I mean, I think the other thing, when you're looking at what the problem, also, it's not just Cashman with starting pitching, it's the organization. The organization has not done a good job as a whole with starting pitching. I mean, look what happened with the Killer Bees. One of them's in the bullpen. One of them is out of baseball. And Manny Benuelos, by some miracle of God, is still pitching in the major leagues, trying to get out there and be effective after, you know, multiple surgeries and just been battling on and off. Like, they haven't. Phil Hughes is not in the league. He's a guy that was not what we thought.
Jabba Chamberlain, he was like one of the more successful as far as starting pitcher goes.
But he was in the bullpen for a little while too. Was effective there. And then they went back and forth. Jabba, they screwed up. You know, there's a lot of these guys that were supposed to be that next echelon, the next group of starting pitchers, starting with like Brian Taylor, you know, like that started the bad trend. Like, they have not done a good job developing their pitching staff. So whether that's on Cashman and the player development, you know, partially I think it is on Cashman because he's putting those guys in the position to develop these players. But I think as an organization in whole, they've just not done a good job. So therefore, Cashman has to go out there and try to find, you know, these free agents and spend a ton of money on what? And has obviously Sonny Gray didn't land. Like, Burnett, you know, had some flashes in 2009 that made it.
I mean, he identified Pineda as a young pitcher to trade their number one prospect at the time for. Pineda didn't work out.
Right.
They just traded prospects for James Paxton, another guy who had team control, kind of like another Sonny Gray. A lot of potential to be a number one pitcher with team control. Beautiful. Let's trade for him. So far, he's been better than Sonny Gray has, but he hasn't been, I don't think, up to expectations.
I have a hard time faulting him for making some of those deals, though, too.
Not faulting him for making those deals, but there's still, if it doesn't work out, you have to criticize. If he identified Sonny Gray, and he identified Michael Pineda, he identified James Paxton.
Pineda was like a throw-in for a throw-in. It was like, I'll take your disappointment if you take my disappointment.
And Pineda was not a disappointment.
Pineda was
good season with Minnesota. I mean, with
Seattle
before the Yankees acquired him.
Yes.
That looked like a beautiful trade on the surface of it,
it
to
did.
Start. You're getting a number one pitcher for a guy who everyone says is a DH.
Maybe.
No, that was at the time. It was like Montero's not going to be a catcher. Best case scenario for him, he turns into a really good DH. Obviously, that didn't work out.
Right.
So, but what I'm saying is, even if you say, I understand the move and it made sense, you can still criticize him when the guy they identify doesn't pan out.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's totally fair. It's totally fair. I think a lot of the reasons he's got to make moves like that, though, is because they had no organizational depth in starting pitching. So some of these guys that he's going to go out there, you know, it's a matter of, and there are missed opportunities, too. I mean, I think if you're going to criticize him for the pitchers that he brought on, you could criticize for the missed opportunities and the fact that he wouldn't give up players for certain starting pitching, or, you know, making spending a little bit more money and getting a guy in return.
Well, there's been a money thing with Verlander acquisition, with the Corbin contract, and Corbin. With the Keuchel contract.
The Keuchel contract is weird. Yes, and so there's multiple deals that I think could have happened that a lot of fans think should have happened that didn't happen. And that's, you can definitely go with the criticism there as well if you want.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Big week ahead. Big week against potential playoff teams. Obviously, playoff, maybe future playoff matchups with Minnesota. Are the Red Sox going to get back into this division race? I'm excited for this week. Any last words, Scott?
Yeah, one guy I was trying to think of was Gerrit Cole. Another one that I think people thought they
and
should
Duhar
have.
And Duhar was the guy.
Pulled the trigger, and they didn't do it. And we saw, you know, Gerrit Cole come over to a competitor and have a lot of success. So, any last words? The BP crew event, like, it was just, again, it was really hot. I appreciate everybody braving the elements and coming out there. A lot of familiar faces, a lot of new faces, really fun. The dugout was back in action. We're looking at some other things for the last one. I'm excited for the last one as well. August 31st against Oakland. You're looking at a potential playoff team in Oakland who is, you know, had a late push last year as well, played well. You expect a good game there. It's going to be the last one. I feel like it's going to be a celebration, hopefully, for the way the regular season's going. But it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, everybody who came out, thank you very much. It was a ton of fun, like they all are. They're just, you know, we just keep going, keep pushing forward, and keep growing this thing. And it gets better and better. So, yeah, that's it for me.
Yeah, and if you guys weren't at the event, you know, congratulations on sitting in air conditioning. But go look at Twitter. A lot of people were posting pictures and stuff. The shirts, we had a big group picture of all the shirts. That was awesome. I got a little revenge on JJ with the posters of him, the Stadium Eat screenshots. So we tweeted out pictures of that. A lot of other fun stuff from the day. Go check it out. Like Scott said, appreciate everyone who came out. I'm sure there was a lot of people who bought tickets just in general to that game, although we're in Yankee Stadium, and we're like, you know what? I'm not doing it. We showed up in full force, so
we
definitely love to see that.
Absolutely.
That's going to do it for this episode, and we will talk to you Thursday.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.